I'm here with Jerry Lynn Johnson, conductor and founder of Black Pearl Chamber Orchestra. Jerry, it's so great to talk to you, even under the circumstances.
Thank you. It's also lovely to speak with you, especially under these circumstances. Just the human contact, even though everyone is social distancing, I think it's bringing people closer together and giving us an opportunity to kind of have real, authentic conversations.
Right. Well, that's what we want to do, because this week has just seemed, I mean, the last 2 months have seemed surreal, but the last week in particular has just felt as if we're kind of fraying at the seams. Because of what's going on in this country, we wanted to connect with artists and have real conversations. So what's going on in your mind about what's going on in the country?
Well, I'm going to go in chronological order first. This pandemic is not unprecedented in the history of this country, but it is certainly unprecedented in our lifetimes. I've spoken with so many people, participated in online events, because people cannot come together physically to grieve, to comfort one another. And so one of the things as an artist in an art form of music, where people don't necessarily think of the body as being involved in the way that it is for dance or for acting or any kind of visually and physically involved art form. I think the presence of the body in our musical art form is something that I think I had taken for granted and not understood how central a role it is, and that the communal aspect of music making and our inability to be together in one place and share a musical experience. A lot of people, both people who are audience members and also people who are professional musicians themselves, miss that human contact. And so that has been very disorienting, I think, for a lot of musicians and performers, not just musicians, but I think live performers of any kind of art form. In regard to the second social crisis that we find ourselves in, my condolences go out to the families of the three most recent victims of police violence and senseless, I think, brutality because of race, and that is Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and most recently, of course, George Floyd. It's been hard to watch the news these days and to see our democratic rights as citizens to gather and protest and exercise our First Amendment rights being taken advantage of by those who would seek to undermine our civilization through violence, through anarchy, through conflict. Those two things coupled together, I think, have operated like two diseases, both of them, one a physical disease and one a social disease, that are now erupting and demanding to be addressed.
So how have you been responding personally to this kind of trauma, really?
I think my first response, once I saw the sadness and the anger boil over into action. You know, the very famous poem by Langston Hughes called Harlem came to mind, and what happens to a dream deferred. Essentially, I think what we're seeing because of the pandemic, because of this long-standing oppression, police brutality in communities of color, and the distrust, and the seeds of distrust that difficult relationship has sown, you're seeing the explosion of everybody's dreams deferred. The pandemic has ended a lot of people's plans, no matter what your race, color, culture, or creed is. Then you add on top of that the violence against people of color, especially Black men and women. What you're seeing is the explosion of these dreams deferred. That was my first thought. My urge, and I'm just as human and outraged by these occurrences as any other. I've sort of trained myself over years to use that negative energy, that anger, that rage, and transform it into something that I can use to create good. That kind of anger can be very powerful energy, but it has to be trained and channeled into doing something constructive to end the cycle of these kinds of events where a Black man is killed, it's caught on camera, a Black woman is killed senselessly, it's caught on camera, no one is brought to justice, the social anger justifiably boils over into something. And then the cycle continues again because change, systemic change, is not occurring.
So now, I mean, it must be particularly difficult when you say you use that energy to create something good. Are you talking about your music?
You know, I have considered myself a citizen artist for a long time. Black Pearl was founded with a very strong sense of social justice through the arts. And the idea of a citizen artist is not new. That's not something I came up with. That goes, you know, back to Jane Addams and Hull House in Chicago back in the late 19th century. But for me now, you know, artists can create any kind of small, tiny personal revolutions that they want. And from a creative standpoint, that's an important statement. But in order in my field to create the kind of systemic change that is aligned with the kind of systemic change that needs to happen in this country, I think the role of an arts institution in society needs to be deeply considered. We as artists, not just as individual artists, but those of us in power at institutions, need to now get off the sidelines and act. I believe a lot of artists in a lot of different art forms feel that art is something that's beyond the fray. It's something that exists outside of mundane matters and is a respite and a refuge from those things. And so some people may feel that getting into politics or social issues is something that is not the role of arts in society. And yet, when I look at where America is right now in this moment with the pandemic and reeling from the injustice that we saw wrought upon George Floyd, what we need to consider as we near USA 250 is, what is our role as arts institutions in a democracy, in a functioning democracy? And I see the media struggling to deal with upholding free press and free speech. I see that our judiciary system is being undermined. There are so many institutions in our society that are being eroded by partisan politics, by tribalism, by increased racial conflict. And so artists, I think, no longer have the luxury to stand apart and aside from these matters. The question is, how do we do that? And for me, it isn't just about individual artists sending a message through a particular piece of art. It has to be something that the entire institution, as it functions in society, is able to create change itself from a systemic standpoint. And for me, that to me means we have to work to democratize creativity. And what I mean by that is, you know, arts institutions tend to function as gatekeepers of an artistic product. And this is by no means in any kind of, you know, argument against the very obvious benefit of having all these great works of art in one place where that are protected and preserved for the future so that we can make them available to generations to come. It's not about the buildings. It's about the role of the institution in society. we have to transform from being gatekeepers of an artistic product to being facilitators of the creative process for the citizens. Because that ability to imagine and then to act on that imagination is something that was protected and enshrined in this country by the framers. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is to me creativity and your ability to imagine your best life. And I don't mean that euphemistically, I mean to imagine what it is that you want to be and then to have the ability and the opportunity to pursue that. And so I think part of that is giving people the right and the freedom to engage in creativity, which is their birthright as human beings. And how do we as an institution in this American society uphold those democratic values through art? This is what I've been thinking about through this. Again, you hear political pundits on TV talking about this has to be systemic change, all of these things. Individual artists, I think, can make powerful statements that can reach people. But if we are really going to remake our society based upon the ideals that it was founded upon, this needs to be at an institutional level.
So is that what you've been doing with Black Pearl Chamber Orchestra?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything that Black Pearl does, without saying a word, has been a political statement about inclusion, about democracy, about bringing people together through the arts. And again, it isn't something that I conscientiously set out to do in terms of making an overt political statement. But again, I think politics and art intersect in ways that are both intentional and explicit. If you think about the songs of like Woody Guthrie, like Old Man Trump, or even if you go all the way back to classical music, Beethoven's Third Symphony, which he scribbled out the dedication to Napoleon after he declared himself emperor and just put in Eroica. So, you know, politics and art have always intersected in those explicit ways. But I think now is the time, as we examine our role in society and what is our duty to this democracy, to really examine the implicit and the silent ways that art and politics interact, how curatorial choices in hiring practices in orchestras or curatorial choices in which artists have a showing at which museum, at which time, how these choices enact kind of our political biases and social values.
So Black Pearl was founded with this conscious effort to include people from diverse backgrounds and ethnicities, and not only on the stage, but on the staff and in the programming and everything in the audiences. So is that a role model for the systemic change that you're talking about, or how else do you affect that other kind of change? Just by having conversations perhaps like this?
I think these kinds of conversations are the first step. They have to be the kind of conversations where people can be honest, where people can be open, where people can be authentic, and they have to come at these issues from wherever they're standing. We can't expect people to be where we want them to be. We have to welcome them as they are, and then we all have to work together to find that. You know, when people ask me about Black Pearl and founding it, you know, my response was, you know, Gustav Mahler said a symphony must be like the world. It must contain everything. And for me, I took that to a symphony and I said, look, a symphony orchestra must be like the world. It must contain everyone. So for me, if the orchestra is a metaphor for the world, what kind of world do we want to live in? For me, it was a world where people, it was a world that literally reflected what America is supposed to be about. There are people who come here from other countries, Venezuela, Brazil, Turkey, Japan, South Korea, China, France, Canada, Russia, all over the world of people who are born here in the United States. They come here, they train at the world's top conservatories, which we are so blessed to have in our backyard, the Great Curtis Institute, Juilliard up the street, Peabody down the street in Baltimore. They train, they work together, they have a shared bond around the traditions, the performance traditions, the technical abilities around classical music performance. And they come together in Black Pearl, and it is the world according to Jerry Lynn Johnson, to be quite honest. It is a world where excellence is the only defining factor, where people bring their authentic selves from whatever culture and ethnicity that they're bringing to the table, and we're all making beautiful music together. That, I think, if you were to take Black Pearl as an institution, that to me would be an institutional expression of democratic values. We program by taking the marginalized voices of composers that you don't typically hear on a lot of performance stages and bringing them center stage. I like to think of that as not necessarily exploding the canon, but expanding the canon and making that a conversation, because that becomes a political decision in itself. Who gets to decide what quote unquote great art is? You know, it used to only be male composers. Now there's female composers. Now we're including more composers of color. And so again, these artistic decisions are also political decisions in a lot of ways. I mean, when you think about the history of orchestras, when it used to be just men in an orchestra, and then suddenly they allowed women to play in the orchestra, and then you only used to just see men on the podium, and now there's a lot more women conductors. And so again, this notion that the arts are somehow outside of the political fray, I think is a fallacy and a dangerous one if they want to maintain their relevance and potency as we move forward in what is going to be a very changed America once we come out of this pandemic, and hopefully one that will be changed for the better as we can create some systemic change out of the tragedy of George Floyd's death.
So music's response to this, because music and art are part of politics, are part of the world, as you say. So right. What's your thinking about what music's response should be right now?
I think music and art have had a heavy burden when the pandemic hit. People turned to music, to books, to movies, to whatever creative art forms they could for comfort, for release, to remind themselves of the joy of life, the joy of living, to give themselves hope and comfort and inspire. And so people have now seen how critical a role art and music plays in our lives. It's no longer just this nice luxury that, you know, you can kind of cut out of an educational system when the funding runs low. People are now understanding how fundamental the creative act is, and how fundamental art is to just the health, our mental health, our spiritual well-being. And so I think people are beginning to recognize that we have to maintain that in our society in whatever capacity, in an art form, whether people can do it online through virtual lessons and those kinds of things. But beyond that, once artists are again able to be in society and offer their work to the world in a way that we are accustomed to doing, and again, that's nothing against kind of adapting to new technology, but like we opened this interview, the role of the body and that communal experience is something I think that is vitally important to people. One of the things that we as artists in arts and music is going to have to do is find a way to bring people together to make sense of these experiences. We have the ability to convene people. We have the ability to touch people's souls. How do we use those gifts to help people heal, to help people make sense of what has gone on with this pandemic, of what has gone on with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery, and to find the strength within themselves to make the change that needs to happen to make our society better.
Right. Well, it'll be great when we can all get together again and be together and listen to music together and make music together. Do you have any music that you're going to, just in terms of either comfort or music that you think people need to hear because they haven't heard?
You know, I'll mention two pieces. One was written by Dr. George Walker, who's a Curtis graduate, first African-American to win a Pulitzer Prize for music composition. There's a very beautiful piece that he wrote. It's actually part of a string quartet, but he actually arranged it for a string orchestra called Lyric for Strings. It is often compared to Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. And it is an incredibly well-performed work, although people have never heard it, which is always an interesting kind of contradiction to me. But I think people should listen to this piece. Dr. Walker had a very hard time as an African-American composer during his lifetime, becoming recognized, feeling respected for his work. And so the fact that he was able to persevere and excel and won this very prestigious prize, it's important that we listen to his work. I also want people to go online and they can find her album, a wonderful African-American woman composer living in New York right now, Jessie Montgomery. She has written a really remarkable piece called Source Code, and I was very fortunate to have my orchestra perform it March 6th, just before the world shut down. Was one of the last gatherings. We had a beautiful performance as part of our 10th anniversary at the Barnes Foundation, and we all look back on that moment like it was just a world away when we were all together making music, celebrating with each other, hugging one another. Mm-hmm. Just seems like a different time. But Jesse Montgomery's Source Code, to me, just evokes a cry of anguish, a cry of determination, and a desire to be recognized as beautiful, as a Black person, that the Black body is beautiful, that the Black experience is worthy to be heard, that everything that has made up the Black experience in America is something that we need to talk about and how that impacts us today. It's just a very powerful piece that she wrote. So those two pieces, Dr. George Walker's Lyric for Strings and Jesse Montgomery's Source Code. Beautiful, both of them string works, both of them string works. So yes.
That's great. Wow, Jerry, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's good to see you and talk to you.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I wish your listeners to stay safe, stay healthy, stay positive. We will all get through this with the power of music, and just love one another.
Great. Thank you.